Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. On this show, I have a conversation with a couple of people in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. And there are very few people in the food world I want to hear from more than these two gentlemen. They are the co-executive chefs of Basso, a Basque restaurant in the Heights. Gentlemen, let me introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Jacques Veyron, welcome to the show.
How's it going, Eric?
I'm good. Thanks for doing this.
Of course.
Max Lappy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for doing this. You know, whenever I have someone on for the first time, I always kind of like to hear a little bit about how a person got into the food world. So, Jacques, why don't you start? Just tell me a little bit about your decision to become a professional chef.
That decision was made when I was about 7 years old. My mom is like a home cook, very good at it, taught me how to cook. But my grandma on my mom's side was one of the best cooks I've ever met. And it was weird because she's an Eastern European immigrant that moved to Mexico. So you have this blend of foods and flavors that don't really make sense, but they do. And it introduced me to a whole new world of cooking at a very young age. So I was cooking a little bit. I went to Escoffier in Austin. I worked at a couple restaurants in Austin. And then one day I manically said, I'm never working in a kitchen again. That didn't really work out too well. But I worked an office job for 3 days and said, actually, never mind. I hate this even more. So I'm going back to the kitchen. So it's been a love-hate relationship this entire time with working as a chef, working as a cook. But I'm really happy that I'm doing what I'm doing.
Max, let me bring you in on this. I mean, how did you get started in the world of professional cooking?
So I think I actually started kind of in the opposite way. I think I thought my parents couldn't cook, and I had such great memories as a kid in restaurants, and I always wanted to be able to do that and cook for myself. It was very selfish, which it usually, I think, you hear most people come in to it to please others. And I don't think I got that until later when I actually got to, you know, cook for people. It was more, I started because I wanted to be able to do fine dining type food and weird experimental flavors for myself. And I had no idea how to, and I couldn't really look to my parents, I guess, to teach me that. I learned later that there is a very interesting cuisine that I grew up with, which is like American, Jewish, Mexican. But yeah, as a kid, I just wanted to eat what I could find in nice restaurants, and I needed a job, and I needed to kind of keep myself out of trouble as a kid. And I think my dad was like, you have to go get a job. I'm not going to give you money to go do whatever you want to do. And I showed up to a bistro that had the best croissants in LA. It was called Maison Girard, and they're no longer around. And I told them I want to work here. I was like 15 or 16 maybe. And I was like, I want to work here. And they kind of laughed at me. They were like, you want to work in the kitchen? I was like, yeah. And they're like, well, how old are you? And I told them, and they were like, we legally can't hire you in the kitchen, but you can be the pastry counter kid. And I was like, no, that doesn't sound cool. I want to work in the kitchen. And I kept coming back until like I convinced them to let me work unpaid. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. I didn't know anything about cooking. I didn't have a knife, and I didn't know that culinary school existed. And they let me in, and I'd go in. I had a weird high school, untraditional high school at the time, where I'd start really late and end kind of late. So I'd either go in before and or after school. And I did that probably for a year. and kind of got addicted to it. And I felt like it kept me far enough from trouble, but kind of close enough to trouble in a weird way. I liked the weird personalities and I liked the intensity, and I liked, like peeling 100 pounds of carrots at a time. I don't know. There was a lot of things that that drew me in. Why I stayed is probably a different story, but I think I've gone on long enough.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think if you can peel 100 pounds of carrots and like it enough to want to do it again the next day, that speaks pretty well of your commitment. Because if you told me that I had to peel 100 pounds of carrots, I would assume that I was being punished somehow, that I had done something horribly, horribly wrong to somebody and was having to make amends for it.
I think a lot of people who are drawn to the kitchen are drawn to feeling, I don't know. I think we like punishment for some reason. Or else why would we do this?
Right. Jacques may not have taken to an office job, but it's a lot less physically demanding than working in a kitchen. Maybe not quite as emotionally satisfying, because you never get that. There's no office job equivalent of seeing somebody eat and enjoy your food. So, that attaboy from the boss just doesn't have the same effect.
Agreed.
So I don't want to get too in the weeds, but Jacques, you grew up in Houston and then you kind of set about working and traveling in various parts of the world. You eventually made your way to California. Tell me about the restaurant where you and Max met and started working together.
Well, we actually met at a restaurant before the restaurant that we're about to talk about. We worked at one place that we both didn't like at the exact same time.
Okay.
And then Max called me one day. It was like, I'm going to start working here. You should come with me. I was like, okay, that's fine. So we worked at Angler in Los Angeles, which is it's a live fire restaurant, much bigger hearth than ours, probably like 30 feet of hearth. It was seafood based. Everything touched the fire, and we had a 30 foot live tank inside. So everything was picked from the tank, killed from the tank. It was a pretty cool place. It's owned by Saison, which is the famous Saison, two Michelin stars. I think they had three and went back down to
They had
two.
three for 10 years, I think.
Yes, I know
Yeah.
that they did hold
Yeah.
three at one point, and I know that they currently have two. But yeah, one of the very best restaurants in California. And I know Josh Skeens, who founded it, is not really involved anymore. But yeah,
Right.
it was one of those kind of pioneering California restaurants.
Yeah, it didn't look, it wasn't like, you know how a lot of fine dining restaurants, they have like a bunch of flowers and it's like set beautifully. Over there, everything was very simple, very plain, but the depth and flavors that went into it like were unmatched. So we took a lot of that style of cooking over fire, keeping things as pure and as good as possible, and brought it to Houston because I felt like there was a hole in the market. I think the things that I've learned all over the world, I would like people to try them. I'd like people to try the things that I've made, the ferments that I've done, the flavors that we've created as a team. It's just it's nice to bring everything you learned back home.
Yeah, no, we will get deep into that shortly, but Max, let me just circle back with you. Just kind of talk about your time at Angler and kind of getting to know Jacques and kind of how you guys hit it off.
Yeah, so we met at one restaurant. I got there and Jacques was already there, and I don't think I was there more than 2 weeks before I really wanted to go to Angler. That was like, I'd just gotten back to LA. I was living abroad for like 4 months. I just gotten back, and Angler had opened while I was gone. And I was kind of waiting for to get my foot in the door, trying to, I wanted to work there. And I was very, there was not many spots in LA that I'd, wanted to work at anymore that I hadn't already worked at. And finally, there was an opening, and I had a good friend who I'd worked with at Animal when I was 18, who was the lead line cook. And I told him, like, let me know when there's a spot available. And when there was, I think I'd been at that restaurant with Jacques for about 2 weeks, and I was not very happy. And I went over to Angler. Me and Jacques, I knew Jacques and I would be friends kind of on my stage at that restaurant. I was like, okay, this is a cool guy amongst not the, you know, people I'd click with very much. To start, we were both like, we connected on the Jewish Mexican thing, of course. And then we were like, oh, we're both like Noma nerds, and we're both like kind of like we have like similar dumb humor, and we love fermentation, fire, and all these things, culinary things.
Now, talk to me about the idea of coming back home to Houston to open a restaurant. How did you, you know, how did you decide that you had kind of learned enough and were kind of ready to take that next step?
Oh, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. So it was the depths of COVID. It was like December 2020. And I was going absolutely crazy because in California, it was a lot of it more locked down than it was here in Texas. So I was going a little stir crazy. Angler just reopened and then closed again. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I was like, well, I know there's this one guy who's always told me, he's like, if you want to open a restaurant, call me. I want to open it. I'm like, okay, great. So I took that very seriously and kind of just like forced myself back to Houston. I started planning it in December 2020 and moved to Houston in January 2021. So it was very quick. But a lot of that was, you know, I've learned all these things at the places I've worked, and there was just too much to learn and too many things to not bring back to Houston. Too many flavors that I have never seen in Houston, too many things that just weren't going on. I was like, well, this is going to be the perfect opportunity to show people what I learned and use the local flavors that we can. And that just kind of snowballed into Basso very, very, very slowly.
Well, and explain the decision to be Basque, because I think that's sort of the first question that people ask me about is what is Basque food? How is it different than other kinds of food? And I have to say, I am out of my depth because I know that it's a region in Spain, but I don't really understand how Basque cuisine is different than, say, you know, some of the Spanish food that I've encountered, or Italian food or French food. So talk a little bit about kind of this decision to be Basque and kind of what that means for what kind of food you're serving at Basso.
Right. So I chose Basque, first of all, because the food's fantastic over there, the style, but the philosophy is really important to me. It's from the earth to the fire, and that's basically it. Do as much as you can to keep it as simple as possible. We cook with a lot of intention at Basso. The wood we use is the same wood that we built the entire restaurant. It's post oak, also because I grew up off post oak. So
thought that would be fun. And because this is Texas, and that's the wood that we cook with in Texas, other than mesquite, I suppose, but...
Agreed. But I just really enjoy the philosophy. There's almost no rules as long as you follow the 10 commandments of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be local. It's like, we can't bring ingredients from Spain to Houston and call it Basque at that point. It doesn't make sense. So it's just, there's a lot of leniency, but at the same time, there's a very strict code that you have to follow. And I was just enthralled with it. I was obsessed with the style of cooking, the freedom you get as long as you follow the rules. It really speaks to my personality. Just, I don't know. I just like fell in love with it. I fell in love with the style. I fell in love with the flavors, the peppers they use, the chilies they use. We just use different types, but they taste the same. And you just do things like they would do, just all local.
Max, let me bring you back in on this. Say a little more about that from your perspective. I mean, what was it about Jacques' idea for a Basque restaurant in Houston that appealed to you, that made you want to pack up your life in California and move to Texas?
So I think, I think we share that philosophy. I think as a kid, like I wanted to be like a botanist or like a marine biologist or something. And I've always been a bit obsessed and maybe overly obsessed with like the locality and seasonality thing. And I kind of have worked at restaurants based off of that philosophy, and maybe have been frustrated when a restaurant, doesn't use farmers markets or doesn't, choose what they're cooking based on what is available locally at this moment. And I think when I was younger, I think I thought of it more than I do now from like a sustainability standpoint. I think I know I still do, but I think a lot of it for me now is also just the challenge and how much more creative you can be with less. Like if you gave me an entire supermarket, an entire farmer's market, entire cheese and charcuterie shop, and you were like, make one dish, it's like the hardest thing to do. But if you gave me two ingredients, I could give you 1,000 different ways to, to prepare them. And I don't know, limitation is really, really important. But yeah, I like the challenge. I like the challenge of, I also don't, again, I'm just been here just 4 months. I've just been in Houston 4 months. And, I don't know what you can eat out of the Gulf raw. I don't know. And I know that there's a lot of mixed opinions, and I don't have I've not been here long enough, and I don't have enough experience here to have a standpoint on, eating out of the Gulf is totally fine raw, or and also I'm sure that I know people eat oysters out of the Gulf and they're fine, and then there's also people who will tell you, oh no, this happened. So I don't know, and I'm sure there's a lot of different variables. In a perfect world, eating out of any sea would be totally safe and great. And if that were true, I'd be exclusively cooking, exclusively using Gulf for our raw section of the menu. Right now, we are only cooking seafood that's out of the Gulf. Like our grilled oysters are from the Gulf. Our grilled fish is out of the Gulf. All the seafood that we can do is from the Gulf. All of our beef, besides the A5 from Japan, is Texas. Our venison is from Texas. I don't know. I like the locality thing for the challenge of how can we source the best possible stuff that didn't get frozen 3 months ago and shipped here based on our demand. Smaller carbon footprint is great, but I think the challenge and the limitation and creativity is just as great.
When I met you in December, shortly before Basso opened, and we were talking, you sort of acknowledged you're new to Texas. You had a lot to learn. You're only a few months into this restaurant, but what have you learned? What are you sort of learning about Texas ingredients and what you can do at this restaurant that maybe you didn't expect or anticipate?
I've learned there are, I already knew there would be. There's a lot of challenges in it. I already knew there would be. I think there are a lot of people who are collaborative, and there's a lot of people whose visions align with ours, and it weirdly can be a challenge finding those people, not because they're not there, but more because I don't know. I think I don't know if I'm too extreme on the locality thing. Like, for, I wish we could do it all from Texas. It's very difficult. I don't think I'll put. There's certain things we'll never be able to achieve, and that's okay. Our scallops are from Massachusetts, and that doesn't really keep me up at night as much as I feel like it could.
I don't even know that there are Gulf scallops.
No,
I mean,
no, exactly. There are things that they're just. I don't think there are, but if there were, I don't know that I'd be able to use them, or that people would order them if they knew the risk. Or I just, you know, there are a lot of challenges. I kind of wish my full-time job was like sourcing, because that's like that's the funnest thing to me. And there's a lot of really, really, really good people. And we're kind of learning who they are, and like, who are the people who want to collaborate with us, and who are the people who, you know, can find the product that we need. It's crazy how much harder it is to find product that's here and like native or like local, how much harder it is to find things that are in your backyard than it is to find something that's in like Japan or New Zealand. I don't know. You know, it's
right.
It's tough.
Jacques, I mean, say a little more about that. I mean, my suspicion is that the food scene has changed quite a bit in the time you've been away, and that the apparatus for finding the kind of ingredients you want to cook with and the kind of people you want to work with has changed substantially. So what did you discover when you came back to Houston and started working on opening Basso?
Well, I was definitely jaded, because I was just in California, and like, I remember the day before I decided that I'm going to move back home, I was at the farmer's market in Hollywood, and I was like, oh man, I don't know if I could leave this. But we found some insanely good producers and vendors recently. We like exclusively use farm to table for all our produce and stuff like that. And it is tough because of how short the seasons are with some things and how fast they move on their website. It is really tough. We definitely work with a handicap, but that doesn't mean that we can't find the best. I think it's exciting. I think it's a challenge. I'm all here for that challenge. So trying to find the best apple for the apple molasses that we have. Like, the salad we have has five different farmers, just in, it's got, what is it? Steel Bow Farms, Planet Forward, Frisk Farms, Southern Harvest, and Zero Point Organics. So I don't know. I think that's a lot of fun for me.
One of the things I've noticed about the restaurant is that other chefs and people in the food community are kind of making their way to Basso. I know when I was there a couple of months ago, that Martin and Sarah Steyer from Nobi's and the Toasted Coconut were there. You know, Justin, you talked about you guys on our date night draft episode. I went back a couple of weeks ago with friends of mine in the bar business. I've seen other people in the restaurant business celebrating birthdays or checking you guys out for dinner. So tell me a little bit about getting to know your peers in the community and what the feedback has been like from some of these chefs and other professionals who've been dining with you.
Well, when I first moved here, so I've actually never worked in a restaurant in Houston ever, except for Basso. It was always Austin, LA, anywhere else that I've worked. So trying to meet people was fun. Actually, the first people I met were the Neo guys, because we were talking. I don't know how we ended up talking, but I was talking to Paolo, and we just ended up planning a pop-up, a collaboration dinner with Neo. And really, that's when I started meeting everyone. Everyone started like paying attention to what we were doing and who we were. Maybe that was good, maybe that was bad. I feel like there was a lot of expectations people had. It needs to be the tapas menu, or it needs to be stuff like that. So
I don't know if that was good or bad, but it definitely got me enough attention to get people interested. Every chef that's come has been happy except for one, and that was like our first day, and he told me all his comments, and we changed it the next day, and he came back and he said it was fantastic meal. So it's just been weird, because it's kind of like all this attention's on you with all these people that you've been respecting for a very long time, just for them to tell you, hey, your food's good. And I don't know, something about that is just very humbling and makes me happy and keeps me on my toes.
Max, let me ask you, I mean, you're new to all this. You may not necessarily know these people or be familiar with them, but what's it been like for you to kind of meet this community? I mean, I know you guys were at the Truffle Masters a couple weeks ago. How that's kind of your big food event, your big debut. What was that like for you?
It was really, really, really cool to be there. I'm really glad we got to do it. It was really fun. It was fun to see so much caviar just, you know, flying. Especially, I don't know. Of course, yeah, I'm very new to Texas. And Houston, I didn't know what Truffle Masters was until 4 months ago. And I think I thought it'd be really fun to do our, I guess, untraditional caviar service. I think you usually see, I mean, obviously there's tons of people who do weird caviar services and are against the red onion, chopped egg and Bellini sour cream, which there's nothing against it. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's not delicious, right? It's just,
no,
you just want to do something different.
Yeah. You could throw a rock and find a place that does it kind of, but I thought it'd be cool and a little maybe controversial to be at an event and be like, if you want caviar, you're going to have to eat this caramel that's infused with anchovies and mushrooms and kelp. And actually, people responded really well to it. A bunch of people came over trying to give us their token, which was really, really cute and sweet. And we weren't competing, but people really liked it. And that was like really nice. I thought we'd piss off more people, which I was kind of looking forward to a little bit, but people liked it. There was one person who came over and asked what it was, and we're like, oh, it's a stroopwafel with a caramel infused with niboshi, which is a dried anchovy, kelp and shiitake mushrooms. And she looked at us and just like slowly backed away with her with her waffle and caviar. I don't know if she ate it or not, but I think as soon as she heard that there was anchovies and kelp involved in this sweet snack, that she was like, she just, I don't know that she would even try it. But that's
right, you know, right. Caviar and caramel, sweet and salty is sort of something that people understand, but you're already kind of screwing with their expectations when you do that. And then when you tell them that the, you know, it's like an umami caramel with anchovy and kelp in it, I think that could be a little hard for people, but I mean, obviously it's working, right? Because my sense is that you actually sell quite a bit of caviar.
Yeah, people like it. People, it's subtle. It's very subtle. Those aromatics or those kind of umami enhancers are really just umami enhancers. Like, you don't take a bite and you're like, oh, there is the shiitake, there is the kelp, and there's the anchovy. It's really just about bringing out more of the flavors of the caviar. What you taste is still the caviar and the butter, and it's not distracting from, you know, what you're actually supposed to be eating, which is caviar.
I've only had one bad review on it, and it was my uncle, and he's like a fancy man. So he was like, I just don't understand why you're doing sweet and salty. I was like, and that day I made a promise to myself. I was like, I'm never changing it for anyone. I'm never doing anything different to it. this is how it's going to be. I'm not going to add accoutrements. I'm not going to do anything like that. People are going to like it how it is. Even if people don't like it, I'm not taking it off the menu. Yep. Just because that's such a special dish to me. Creating it was fun. The R&D of that was fun. Trying to figure out everything for our caviar service was an issue. And then one day I was like, Stroop waffles. It has to be Stroop waffles. I bought this Junior Master Chef waffle maker to try it out. It's made over like 1,000 waffles at this point. And it's just one of those dishes that I just refuse to budge on. Like I've heard it all. Oh no, that's too sweet. Like, what are you doing? I just like, it's good. It should be a dessert. It should be this, it should be that. And I just turn my brain off and just like, it's like one of those monkeys, like hitting the cymbals.
There are a couple other dishes I want to ask you about, kind of the, you know, across, I guess I've been like 3 times already. So across 3 visits, there are a couple of things that I've been sort of gravitating towards. The first one is the roasted cabbage with the lamb bacon. So just tell me a little bit about kind of the conception of that dish and kind of what role it plays in the menu.
Cabbage is hot right now. Cabbage is,
there's a whole New York Times thing about cabbage, I think. So yeah, you're very on trend.
Yeah. I think some of the best dishes on the menu or some of the things that end up sticking are like, so I don't know, there's not a very good there's not a very good story on it. Like, I saw cabbage on farm to table, I was like, all right, I like eating it, I like it roasted, we have fire, we can burn it, there's nothing, you know, we can't do to it. I saw a lamb belly, I saw a lamb from Texas on farm to table as well. There was apples in season on farm to table at the time, and it felt, I don't know, it felt apples, cabbage, and lamb is just like, I feel like maybe some people would be like, oh, it sounds weird. And then I bet you there's another billion people in the world who are like, yeah, that's my breakfast. You know, like that is it feels, I don't know where it's from. Maybe it's Eastern Europe or like, yeah, I'd imagine it's like an Eastern European thing, but it feels very classic somehow. And it's also really nice to have kind of a protein-like lamb that, you know, a lot of people don't eat beef and a lot of people don't eat pork and they might eat lamb. So it's nice to have something like that. The whole preparation is we burn all this cabbage, we quarter them between quarters and eighths, depending on the size. We burn all of them and then we steam them just in butter and shiro shoyu, white soy sauce. And then we make this lamb bacon. We use brown sugar and salt and we smoke it for like 6 hours and then slice it and then render the fat above the hearth before service every day. And we make this apple molasses, which we make by steaming apples with a pectic enzyme, which just like gets you a massive yield instead of juicing it and getting like, I don't know, 50, 70%. And then we reduce it down to a molasses. There's no interesting story on how it came about besides this is what was available from Texas at that time.
Well, but that's what you were talking about, right? Within the restrictions that you had set for yourself, there's creativity and all of a sudden, you know, people are coming to Basso and they're talking about this roast cabbage. I mean, I think that's kind of at the heart of what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. I come up with almost everything I come up with is based on what is available. You know, like I kind of see an ingredient, I'm like, all right, how little can I do to that? Like what's easiest, but how do we keep the cabbage kind of cabbage? How do we keep the lamb?
And then the one other dish I just want to ask you about is the pork chop. Cause that, I'm more than anything, I think that's the one that when I talk to people about their meals at the restaurant, they rave about. So just say a little bit about kind of what you're doing that makes your pork chop different than other people's pork chops.
We start, I think it starts with, we found really, really good pork. It's not from Texas currently. That's something I'm struggling with finding. There is one person, and if you're out there listening to this and you produce pork here, please come to me. I want to try your pork. I want to find pork. I feel like it's out there, but I've also heard it might just not be. Might not be, but I know it's there. There is one person doing it, and it's really good. There's reasons we struggle with it, and I won't get into that. But the pork we use right now is from Iowa. It's from Sakura. It's fantastic pork. It's probably tied at the top with the best domestic pork chops I've ever had, which it's tying with Pete's and Barnett in California, which I've always used when I was there. We brine it in a very simple brine, and we salt and pepper it onto the grill. And I wanted to do a pork on pork dish. Like, there's a lot of that on the menu if you look for it, where it's like pork and pork or eggs and eggs and just like kind of seasoning one thing with its cousin, basically. And it sounds kind of messed up to say that, but yeah, we do this really nice pork chop on the grill, and the sauce is just pork cheek. It's just basically guanciale. We've made our own, and we're moving into making our own as soon as we move fish out of our dry ager and move kind of different proteins into it. But it's there's no liquid, or there's nothing. The sauce is just pork. So we use pork cheeks and render out the fat, and then blend up the solids and blend the fat back into it. So it's like kind of almost bacon bits. And then the chamomile, I saw it at the farmer's market. What's that farmer's market? Is it Airline?
Well, it was Canino's. Now it's just Houston's farmer's market.
Houston farmer's market. We saw this fresh chamomile there, and the pork chop was exactly what it was, what it is now, which is just the chop, the jowl condiment, and a Meyer lemon. And it felt perfect, or it felt like close to perfect. And I bought like 10 bunches of this fresh chamomile at the market, and I had no plan for it. And then the pork, I saw the chop, and I was like, oh wait, yeah, this is complete now. This is done. And I don't know, chamomile is like a very nostalgic thing. I feel like it just makes me happy whenever I smell it. It's great in tea. I think obviously everybody uses it as tea, but I think it's a really, really good savory ingredient. And that dish makes me happy. I would order that. That's what I'd get.
All right. Well, we're running a little long, but I there was one sort of other thing I want to ask you about. And I ran into you guys last week, and we were out, and I know that the feedback has been like pretty, as you said, it's been very enthusiastic. People are excited about this restaurant. I am personally excited about this restaurant. There aren't that many Live Fire restaurants. There are no other Basque restaurants that I'm aware of. But I also know that you guys hold yourself to pretty high standards. So talk to me about like not becoming too complacent, because I really do think, you know, I don't want to be too fawny, and I'm not gonna say that you're there yet, but I do feel like Basso has potential to be considered among one of the very best restaurants in Houston. But you have to like stay motivated and keep going and keep kind of pushing for, you know, a smoother service experience, like defining what your cuisine is, all of the things that you kind of, I think, you know, but just talk to me about like staying motivated when the feedback has been so, the initial response has been so enthusiastic so quickly.
For me, sometimes, I don't know. I'm very suspicious when people tell me something's good, because I'm like, don't lie to me. So a lot of that goes into that. I also like weird things. I know Max does too. I get a lot of motivation from like my friends in like these Nordic restaurants and these European and Japanese restaurants with these people that I've worked in. And they're like, you have to push the boundaries. If you don't, people get bored. And then you just become another Chili's. But just keeping people on their toes, like
makes me happy. So, like, we had a dish that was so good and everyone liked it, and we took it off. And it was because I didn't like it, like the maitake. I was like, this isn't how I want it. We're taking it off. And people got mad. A lot of people came in. They're like, "What? Why'd you take that off?"
We had somebody leave because the maitake wasn't there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. We had someone leave because the maitake wasn't there. That's okay. That doesn't really bother me. I'd rather it be better, personally. So I think my selfishness and Max, like, not in a bad way, but our selfishness is what's going to drive this restaurant to be better. And I think it's okay to miss. It's okay to have a dish that isn't, like, we think it's good and it's conceptualized and it's different. We just want people to try it. If you don't like it, that's fine, but you tried it. So, I don't know. There's a lot that goes into what we're doing when we conceptualize it. Obviously, you have to have your hits, but there's just some things that I think that really taste well together. And if you don't think so, that's fine. You have your opinions, but I just wanted to show you something different.
Yeah, Max, let me spin this back to you. I mean, what are your goals? I mean, you're 4 months in, you know, where would you like to be, you know, 6 months from now as you start kind of heading to that year mark?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I feel like we need some sort of consistency before we can keep going with this like weird thing. So like finding the things on the menu that are comfortable enough and also weird enough and sell well, people like them. You can have like the lettuces, like they're not going anywhere. They're really nice and fresh and kind of cut through a lot of the rich things we do. So those consistencies help us push weirder ideas and push more conceptual dishes. Yeah. Like Jacques was saying, I kind of never trust when anyone says anything's good. Like, it kind of freaks me out. And I'm like, why is everyone lying to me? Like, there's no way everyone in that dining room is like, why are they like nodding their heads? Cause I don't believe it.
This is like such a stereotypically like Jewish reaction to praise, like culturally, like not all Jews, but yeah, there's just like that sort of suspicion of like, you're not being honest with me.
Yeah, I think it is a stereotype. I remember learning as a kid from my parents, like Jewish people question everything, like, like, and I think it's a good thing. Maybe in this sense, maybe I could use more sleep than keeping myself up at night thinking about why do people tell me it's good when it's, I don't know. But yeah, I don't see us stopping pushing any time. I know we have a really, 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 really long way to go. I think that we're all right for being new, but I know that we're gonna, you know, I won't be okay with where we're at a month down the line. I won't be okay with where we're at then a month further. Like, I'm kind of competitive in some ways. Like, if we're playing Monopoly and I lose, I'm not gonna like throw the board and like steal your cash. But culinarily, like professionally, artistically, whatever it is, like, I'm kind of competitive. I like competing with myself. I don't know. I don't ever feel like we've done enough. So, yeah.
I'm my biggest critic too. I'm absolutely my biggest critic.
We are stubborn. I don't know. Selfish. Yeah. I think stubborn was the word because I know we are stubborn, which somehow our stubbornness like kind of works together. Like somehow we're able to, it's not like competing stubbornness when we collaborate, we are in agreement that this is not good enough.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's like a quote. It's like, I'm gonna misattribute it. If I say that it's like Dennis Miller or somebody like that from the 80s or 90s. I'm just gonna misattribute it, but it was something like, I think that I'm right and screw everybody else, right? It's like you two have decided that you know what you're doing and you're gonna just do it. And you know, it's a little bit of like Icarus, right? Like you can fly too close to the sun and it could all come crashing down, but right now it's working for you and it's exciting. And again, I don't want to be too fawning because I don't think you're done yet, but I think you've still got a ways to go. But it's why when Jacques was like, yeah, we're ready to do the show, I was like, all right, let's do it. Cause I think there's exciting stuff happening at your restaurant and you know, this is a good moment to catch you. And then we'll come back in a year from now and see how far you've come and celebrate that.
That'll be a good day, a year down the line, just to look back. They're even like Max keeps all our old menus so he could go through them and be like, I can't believe we did that, or what were we thinking?
Yeah, we started the archive. I think the archiving is really important to see, like, yeah, like we had a whiteboard before we had menus, before we had soft opening, like we had a menu, and it was kind of when I was in LA and me and Jacques were talking, like, all right, what's our opening menu? And he sent me his opening menu, and then I sent back, kind of took off things and put on things, and then we kind of kept going back and forth on it until we had something. And that something is now on a whiteboard in Sharpie, I think. And we're keeping it. And that whiteboard is now retired because of how perfectly shitty, and it's, excuse me, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse, how bad that, it's such a bad menu. And it's really nice to look at. And like, yeah, I mean, there's things that are so, so awesome. Like when I was in the Basque Country, I would eat the Gilda like all the time, and I love it, and I love how it tastes, and it's nice to drink or eat with beer. And my mom's name is Gilda, and there's like a special connection with that for me. But it makes zero sense to put on our menu. As much as it's the most Basque thing, there's nowhere for it to work on the menu. Like if you're getting, because you know, you have to kind of think about people getting red wine or people getting like this Pincho, and also getting whatever else goes in the first course, and it kind of competes against everything. It's a perfect Basque bar snack, but it is a very, very competitive dinner restaurant menu item. But yeah, that menu really sucked. And I'm sure we're going to look at this one from March, whatever, yesterday, March 17th, in a couple months, and be like, that is hilarious, you know?
All right. Before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Jacques, what is your favorite ingredient?
Kelp.
Max, how about you?
Bene. Damn it. White soy.
Max, what is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Schwazy.
Jacques, how about you?
Oh my God. It was Matisse Yahoo at the JCC.
That's legendary.
That is a perfect Houston Jewish answer. Yeah. Jacques, what is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
In-N-Out.
Max, how about you?
I would second that, but I found that there is Panda Express drive-thrus in Houston. So I'm going to go with Panda Express orange chicken Beijing beef.
Jacques, who is your favorite sports figure, past or present?
Ooh, Dennis Rodman.
Max, how about you?
Justin Kobayashi, the hot dog eating champion.
Perfect. And then finally, I know you guys are super busy, but Max, what is the best new Houston restaurant you've been to since you moved here? Or just period, what is your favorite Houston restaurant that you've been to since you moved here?
Tan Tans and Nancy's Hustle. Oh, and Theodore Rex. I do I have to choose one?
No, you don't. We're not nearly that strict. Jacques, since you've been here a little longer, what's on your radar? What are you dying to try that you haven't had a chance to go to yet?
That I haven't had a chance. I'd like to go to June. Still haven't been. I think that's the only one that I haven't been to that I've been wanting to try this whole time.
That's a perfectly good answer. And they're basically right down the street from you. So
right.
Well, gentlemen, let me I just want to wish you the best of luck in the Tastemaker Awards Best New Restaurant Tournament. You're in the semifinals, so you're up against Andiron. I think there will still be one day left to vote when this podcast airs on Thursday. So keep pushing.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
All right. Give us the website and the social media for Basso.
BassoHTX.com and at BassoHTX.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Eric. It was cool. Very fun. Thank you.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.